Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. There was much excitement in India yesterday when that country's first effort to send an orbiter to Mars succeeded. Analysts say the craft, nicknamed MOM for Mars Orbital Mission, will do as much to boost the stature of Indian scientists and engineers as it will for gathering data on the red planet. Only 21 of 51 efforts in history to reach Mars by various countries have been successful, but our astronomy contributor Gene Creighton tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North that we have actually been exploring the planet for a half century. She says the more recent missions, though, have gotten much more attention.
I think that's because the rovers on Mars have gotten, of course, a lot of publicity in the last 15 years or so. So that makes sense that you would be aware of rovers on Mars. But I have been interested in Mars as of late, and I found that, to my surprise, that there have been 40 missions to Mars. What's interesting is that when we started this adventure in the early 60s, we had the idea that Mars was a thriving place, if not with intelligent creatures on the ground, but certainly a hospitable place. And the first images that came in successfully in 1964 from Mariner 4 indicated that this was really not the case, that this was a dry, barren, cold, unfriendly place. So this was such a shock to the world system that it took us a while to kind of absorb that and have to change the perception that most people had, not just, you know, the general public, but also the scientists.
Obviously, scientists seem to think, too. What do you know what it was that made us think that Mars was more hospitable than it actually was?
Well, because if you looked at telescope images and some of the spectra, it suggested features. It suggested possibly, you know, canals. Maybe there wasn't water right this moment, but, you know, that there had been. There were also changes. You could see seasonal changes on the poles, which made them think, ah, some of the water is frozen water. So basically they walked in thinking, you know, this is an interesting place to consider sending people possibly, that this would not be a place where life would be very hard indeed. So when the dust settled literally and they realized, okay, well, Mars isn't a dead place. There are volcanoes there. And in fact, the largest volcano in the solar system, Olympus Mons, sticks out of the fairly shallow, fairly rarefied atmosphere of Mars. So they caught a little glimpse of this huge mass of a volcano.
And when was this?
Late 60s.
Okay. So we're still talking like 45 years ago.
We're still talking a long time ago. The next big step was Viking. The Vikings arrived. Viking 1 arrived on Mars on 1975. And what's amazing is even the scientists, the engineers themselves didn't realize what an accomplishment this was and how long it was going to be before anybody could do it again. To hear some of the engineers, you can almost cry because you can. The excitement is so palpable that here is a world, a new planet that hasn't been photographed before, and here we are taking pictures of it on the ground. It was amazing. But then we had a hiatus because the Cold War was kind of slowing down a little bit and funds were getting reassessed since the Apollo missions had already been successful. People had already landed on the moon. So there wasn't that kind of budget that was required for these very ambitious projects. And in the end, it was in 1996 where there was a major breakthrough again after several failures on both the Americans and the Soviets at the time. Failures, we had Pathfinder. Now, do you remember Pathfinder?
I do. I certainly do. And I remember waiting for those images to be transmitted. They were on national television,
weren't
they?
That's right. So when Pathfinder landed, it was such a beginning. Actually, really, it was the beginning of a new era because that meant that the whole concept that you can take a robot, you can wrap it with some kind of balloon material, toss it from an orbiter on the surface of Mars, have it bounce a few times, and then expect it to kind of settle and start moving on the ground. This is a moving target now. It was just amazing, and it's worked. And it has been, as a concept, a very, very successful idea for the last, you know, almost 20 years now.
Now, is that original Pathfinder still working? Are we still getting images from that one?
We are not.
Okay.
No. So after that, we send a bunch of orbiters. And the idea was, we need very detailed maps. We need a lot of data to understand Mars before we can send rovers that could stay there for longer. We would need to pick our targets, not only where they would land, but also what they would discover, what they would explore. And furthermore, if we wanted to send people to Mars, we would definitely need constant surveillance of the Martian surface. So that turned out to be a triumph with Mars Odyssey in 2001, I think appropriately.
Appropriately.
Enough,
appropriately. Yes. And the music is swelling in my head as I hear.
And in 2003, we had the next thrilling episode of Spirit and Opportunity. These were two little rovers that could. Spirit had a much harder time of it, all kinds of obstacles. But even Spirit survived many times over the life expectancy of that particular rover. And Opportunity is still going.
So
11 years later,
wow.
Opportunity has now covered more than a marathon. I know you're a runner yourself. So it isn't at a pace that would threaten you in any way.
I don't know. It's probably faster than me.
No. But still, the fact that we have machines in multiple places on Mars that have covered, you know, significant distances now, over 40 kilometers in the case of Opportunity, you know, should be a thrill for us all.
And so now that Opportunity is still sending us data, do we have anything new? Is anything new happening?
Well, when we first sended landers to Mars, we found to our surprise and I guess a little disappointment, material called olivine, which suggested that there hadn't been water at that particular location for some time. Now, this was disappointing to the scientists because the mantra has been search for the water, follow the water, right? And the reason for that is, I think we've talked about this together before, that all chemistry of life that we find on Earth ultimately has some connection to water. Even if you find it in places that are not necessarily entirely water-based, you do ultimately see that at the nitty-gritty of it, there's water in the chemistry. So we've been looking for water and finding olivine was disappointing. But then people thought, well, that was just one site. Let's try, say, somewhere close to those volcanoes where there's a huge scar, much larger than the Grand Canyon, covers the distance between Los Angeles and New York. That is a place clearly that water kind of made, you know, a trench. So that spot was tapped, if you will. And of course, not one or two, but multiple suggestions of water. Even we saw from orbiters pictures at different times, it looks like their gullies, the marks that are made, change over time. It could be that water is running occasionally on Mars if it's facing south. So in other words, if it's getting a lot of sunlight, even now. Occasionally, we're not talking here about seas of water, right? But the fact that the conditions allow that from time to time is exciting in and of itself, because we know there's a lot of frozen water even directly under the surface. So for all we know, there could be bacteria under the surface perfectly comfortably situated.
Life on Mars.
Life on Mars. No promises. I'm just saying that we still haven't ruled such a situation. Now, the next, of course, big player here is Curiosity. It landed in 2012, and it has traveled now significantly faster than other rovers before it. And because it's nuclear-powered, it's not limited by what kind of sunshine it gets. So what also is really interesting to me, and I frankly didn't know this, that there was an experiment called Mars 500 where a crew, I believe of five people, international crew, spent 500 days in an isolated unit, self-contained place where it pretended to be, you know, a spacecraft, and they had a pretend little playground that was supposed to be Mars where they would do their explorations. And they ran through all the kind of routines that people would have, you know, talking to ground control and all this on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to understand, you know, how does that work for people? Are there any ramifications that, you know, people hadn't considered? And it turns out that there's some serious sleep disturbances, that people don't sleep so well when they're confined in the same space with the same people for that long.
And so this has implications on actually getting people to Mars. Right.
The other thing I didn't know, because I didn't sign up, but apparently there's a company called Mars One who is trying to get people to Mars by 2023, but one-way tickets. So the idea is that they can. We certainly have the technical wherewithal to get people to Mars, but as long as we don't need to bring them back, we're all set. So they are going to set up a biosphere of sorts. They would have to grow their own food, and they would have to be trained, I guess, for 7 years to make sure that they can deal with medical issues, among other things.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, essentially, you are truly being exiled.
Yes. 700,000 people applied.
Wow.
Yes. 700,000 people were perfectly happy to get a one-way ticket to Mars. I wasn't one of them, Bonnie.
No, nor was I. I don't know that I even knew about it. And as much as I love the idea of space travel and exploration, I don't know that I like the one-way part.
The one-way part is a bit of a snag.
Yeah.
But anyway, that kind of, I think, illustrates how exciting this possibility is for us all, even if we're not willing to pack our bags and go to Mars. We're excited about, you know, watching it all happen and unfold. Later on, we are going to see weather missions that are now at Mars. MAVEN is studying the atmosphere of Mars. There is an uncanny amount of methane, by the way. Left to its own devices, the methane would just go away, would just fizzle out of the atmosphere of Mars. But there seems to be some way of replenishing it. This could be something as simple as, you know, gas trapped in the ground eventually is released. Or it could be that there's some life form somewhere that are replenishing the methane. This is a big question. And the other is the other mission that's the first attempt to this for India is the Mars Orbiter mission that is also kind of a proof of concept whether India can also participate in this exciting adventure.
So all kinds of adventures on the Red Planet.
Indeed.
And to the Red Planet. I wish I could go. But that one-way ticket, no.
No. So no. You're going to have your proxies. You're going to have your rovers and machines giving you all the data that you need.
There you go. Well, Jean Creighton, as always, it is a pleasure to talk to you. Happy fall. And we'll catch you next month.
Thank you.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Jean Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. She spoke with Lake Effect's Bonnie North about Mars exploration. Another break now, and then the American South, channeled through the songwriting and luscious harmonies of the Secret Sisters. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.
Second stage is cut. We're now in orbit. Stabilizers up. Running perfect. Starting to collect requested data.